Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility.
Welcome, everybody. We are thrilled to be joined today once again with an old friend of ours, Lindy Hockenberry. She is with Integrated PD, and she is here with us to talk about this up-and-coming topic that is on everybody's mind these days, it seems, of artificial intelligence, or AI. So I say let's just jump right into it, Lindy. And on a basic level, can you kind of help our listeners to understand what is this AI that everybody's talking about?
Yeah, so actually, I thought the best way to do this was to ask our chatbots what AI is. So I asked both Bard and ChatGPT, which are kind of the two leading text generators right now in AI. And I really liked Bard's answer. It was very simplistic and easy to understand. The ability of a machine to simulate human intelligence, such as the ability to learn, reason, make decisions. So really, it's this idea of simulating human intelligence. ChatGPT said something really similar. It was just a little more high level. Computer systems that can perform tasks that typically require human intelligence. And the goal of AI is to simulate human cognitive ability. So learning, reasoning, problem solving, perception, understanding language, etc. So really, really similar. I really like those definitions. And you can kind of just put it down to simulating human intelligence. However, to dig a little deeper in that, I wanted to talk about how both, when I asked both Bard and ChatGPT, they both gave those definitions, and then they both said that AI is a broad field and that there are many different types of AI and approaches to AI. And I feel like that's really important to talk about in the context of this conversation of like AI in education today, is understanding that there's so many different types of AI out there. And I feel like I need to just say this. I have a blog post about this from a few months ago, but I just need to say it because I think it's so important that you, if you use technology in your professional or personal life, which I would say is the majority of humans nowadays, right? You've been using AI for years and you probably didn't even know it in both your professional and personal lives. So there's a Swedish philosopher, and he does a lot of work in like AI, and he has a really good quote. He says, "A lot of cutting edge AI has filtered into general applications, often without being called AI, because once something becomes useful enough and common enough, it's not labeled AI anymore." So just to give a few examples, in your professional life, you probably have been using for a really long time spell check, right? That is a type of AI, right? It's the ability of the computer to say, oh, this isn't spelled wrong, or this is spelled wrong. We think it's one of these words. That's AI, right? Microsoft's editor feature, they took it a step further, and now it will even tell you like, oh, this passage isn't worded right, or it's too wordy, or the sentence is too long, right? That is AI at its finest. Email spam filters. Everybody's email has to have a spam filter. That's AI. It's taking your emails as they're coming in and it's saying, oh, we think that this is one that you want to read. We think that this is junk, right? And you can train it and you can say, oh, no, that was not junk. That happens to me a lot. I find stuff in my spam, right, that I should have not gone in my spam, and I can kind of train it and say, no, anything from this email, that's AI. We're training a machine, a computer, right? More recently, Google Forms in the last several, I mean, it's been several years now, has that auto-populate feature. So many teachers use Google Forms. Whenever I teach Google Forms, I always say, so watch this. And I start typing a question and it will auto-populate. It'll try to figure out like, oh, this question is a multiple choice or a short answer question. That's AI. And I always say it's using AI to figure this out. Most schools and teachers use plagiarism detectors. That's AI, right? So there's just so many examples in your professional world. You've already been using it. Also in your personal world, fraud detection, right? Everybody's probably had that experience where you go on vacation and you run your credit card and then you get an alert that says, was this you? You know, because the AI is working in the background saying, you live in Montana. You don't usually buy things in Texas. So is this you, right? That's AI. Face detection, like iPhones have face detection now. AI chatbots. So everybody's probably been on a website where you're talking to a chatbot. That's a pretty obvious form of AI. Netflix recommendations, right? And on Netflix and Amazon, where it tells you like, oh, well, you've bought this before. You might want to buy this, or you watched this before. You might want to watch this. Like those are all types of AI that have been in our lives for years, right? And just to kind of like say one more thing here about this, I think is really important. It's important to understand that there's two main categories of AI. There's a lot of different types and things underneath those two categories, but I think it's important to understand you've got narrow AI. You might hear it called like weak AI. And that is the AI that solves a specific problem. So all those examples I just gave you are narrow AI. Alexa, Siri, Google Assistant, those are all examples of narrow AI. Cortana, you know, all the digital assistants out there, self-driving cars, chatbots, all types of narrow AI. So I just said chatbot. So that means that ChatGPT and Bard, those are the two kind of leading generative AI chatbots out there, are still examples of narrow AI. They are still narrow AI. And the reason I explain this is to understand that the other main category of AI is general AI, or you might hear like AGI, which stands for artificial general intelligence. So general intelligence AI, you know, along those lines, that is like where the AI can perform any task a human can. So that's like Rosie from the Jetsons and Bicentennial Man, right? If you haven't watched that movie, you should. It's a great I feel like it's so applicable to where we're at in life right now. We're not there yet. So we actually, there's a whole, in the last, since November, since ChatGPT was released, it's like been this craziness of AI, right? And now it's everywhere and it's so much different than it used to be, but we're still not even we're still in narrow AI field. ChatGPT and Bard are still narrow AI. Does that make sense? I think that's important.
Yeah. Because it also goes to, I think, the implications that people put on AI and the connotations that the word has. Because it was interesting, the quote that you mentioned, you said the person mentioned that when something becomes useful enough and integrated enough, it's no longer considered AI. Which I think speaks to the connotation that we put on that word. It has this really broad AI, like, oh my gosh, it's very polarizing. So I'm wondering if you can speak to a little bit about that, about the connotation it has and why you think people often go to either end when they hear that word.
Yeah, you know, I think with movies, media, pop culture, we've got Terminator, right? We've got all these movies. Right. This idea of like robots taking over the world. And so when they hear artificial intelligence, that you get this deep feeling of like a Terminator world for a lot of people. So that's why I wanted to make sure to explain like the narrow AI versus the general AI. The Terminator world, that's general AI. That's artificial intelligence that can perform any human task. Like, we are not there, honestly, from what I've read, and I am not an expert in like where, you know, who knows, there could be some company out there that's made a lot of progress towards general AI, but we're not there yet. And there's actually a lot of people like that criticize it and say that we'll never be there. Like artificial intelligence is never going to get to a point where it can truly replace every task that in my opinion, we're never going to get a place where AI can truly replace every task that a human can do, right? So where we're at right now is that narrow AI, and it all has to do with data sets. And I think this is important to understand for the context of the rest of our conversation too, and understanding how you do this as a school and as a teacher, as an educator, where you go with AI. So AI systems that we have now are trained from a data set. They have this big group of data. So ChatGPT, for example, has their data sets, GPT-3, but then they also have a paid version that runs off the GPT-4 data set. That's a limited amount of information that it's pulling from. All of those examples I gave you, even self-driving cars, are still in that idea of like this data set. And if that confuses you, you don't understand it, it's important to understand that. I feel like it's important for your students to understand that that's how narrow AI works. There's a lot of cool resources out there that really help explain it. Google has a site called QuickDraw. So if you just go do a search for Google QuickDraw, it has where you like draw, it'll tell you to draw a star and then it'll try to guess what it is. But then at the end, you can actually click and see the data set that it's pulling those guesses from. That's where it finally, several years ago, somebody showed me that. And I went, oh, I get it. This is the data set. It's pulling from the data set. So that is understanding like how to see and contribute to a data set. Then Google also has what's called Teachable Machine. And you can actually create your own data set. So that's like, once you understand, okay, this is what a data AI data set is, then you can go to Teachable Machine, you can create your own data set, and it kind of like further solidifies that information.
That's fascinating when you think about the ability that you would have to use the data set, right? And to think about who's controlling the data set, and then how do we use it for our benefit, and then how do we grow the data set? So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and what you've noticed in terms of how do we actually gather these data sets, and then what's the usability, if you will, of them?
That's a super good question. And I don't think I think that's where everyone is at right now, of not knowing where to go in terms of like copyright and fact checking. Because have you ever asked either like ChatGPT or Bard, if you ask them something and then you say, what is the source of this information? Have you ever done that?
No.
Oh, it's super interesting. Actually, here, let's just do it. I've got ChatGPT up here because this really helps it make sense too. So I'm going to say, this is ChatGPT. What is the source of that information? I have a prompt that I had given it earlier that's still. So here's the response. As an AI language model, my responses are generated based on a mixture of licensed data, data created by human trainers, and publicly available data. I have not been trained directly on specific sources, nor do I have access to proprietary databases. And then there's a few more sentences there. But basically, it's saying like, I can't give you a specific source because my data set is from thousands of sources out there. So as a teacher, how do you have a student cite ChatGPT? Right. They just cite ChatGPT? Like, nobody knows. Like, there's no standards out there yet because it's so, the generative AI like ChatGPT is so new that nobody knows.
Right. Right. Well, and it's like when Wikipedia came out, when people were able to input the data itself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you weren't necessarily sure where that data was coming from either. It sounds similar in terms of like, it's almost saying, just trust me. And I think that's scary for people too, right? In terms of, wait, you can't tell me where you got this from, then how can I believe it?
That's exactly. And that's why it's so important that teachers now have to, and schools, not just teachers, schools have to prioritize teaching kids how to fact check. So what do you do? I was using ChatGPT for stuff yesterday, and I was constantly opening up a new tab and doing another search for the same prompt and checking and making sure that the information it gave me was accurate, right? I know there's a lot of criticism out there about, well, you know, like, how could we ever use AI as like tutors for kids? That's one of the ideas, is like, well, what if every kid had a personal tutor? Like, wouldn't that be awesome, right? And the criticism is, but they can give wrong information. But then I'm going to say, can teachers give wrong information? Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Information as a teacher. And I have been given wrong information as a teacher. Right. So
right.
Point being, we got to teach fact checking. We got to teach kids how to understand when a source is credible, when it's not credible, when you do need to fact check. Right. Versus when you just take a source's word for it, whether that source is a person, AI bot, or a website. Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept as well. You're talking in terms of being able to admit when we've done something wrong, even, right? Like you said, teachers can give misinformation. We might go back though and correct it and say, yesterday I mentioned X, Y, or Z. I went home and read about it. And so it's interesting as you talk about, you know, the ability of AI to collect and grow its database and be generative. Would that be something that could factor into the technology, is being able to also go back and say, actually, the information I gave was incorrect. I've now updated my sources or something like that. I'm curious what that generative ability would be.
That's one of the concerns, is that, so I talked about data sets, right? So right now, like most of the AI out there is based upon a data set, and there's different types of data sets, and we'll not go down there, but in a general term, right? You've got this set of information that AI is pulling from. So you said, well, a teacher can correct themselves and say, oh, you know what? I told you this. I found out that's not correct. Like the way AI is working right now, at least from my understanding, there's not that ability because it's a limited data set. And actually, I had asked something of ChatGPT yesterday, and it literally said, my knowledge set cut off in like 2021. I think it had a specific like September of 2021 or something like that. You need to fact check that. And it said there might be updates since that date. So it showed its, I don't know if you'd call that a bias or a lack of information, but it was able to say, like, you know, I only have information up to this date. This could have changed after this point.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. There's a lot to that. The notion of adaptability, the notion of right and wrong, even in terms of the facts that you're given, and just in terms of how you teach this technology as well. And so I'm curious a little bit about your thoughts on that, because I know you work with teachers as well. What can teachers do? How can they go and teach something like this to themselves so they understand how to use it, and then to families, to the students, and be able to integrate it rather than be scared of it or overwhelmed by it or to completely want to shut it off? Because I know it can be very polarizing. So I'm curious, what have you been talking with teachers about, and what have you noticed teachers asking for even, or trying to understand about this technology?
Yeah, good question. I was going to say, I'm glad you said, and teachers learn about it, because that was going to be my first thing, was to teach it, you have to understand it. So step number one is schools have got to get AIPD to their teachers. They have to have basic AI literacy. They have to understand it. Just that quick little AI 101 that I gave you, you know, I could imagine there's a lot of people that are really confused and don't understand the different types, and like, what is generative AI? And generative AI is different than general AI, by the way. That's super confusing. That took me a while to wrap my brain around, right? So anyway, to get to the point, like, teachers have got to have PD, they've got to have training, they need to have time to brainstorm and talk with other teachers, right? And understand it at a basic level and understand the effects on their curriculum and be able to talk to other teachers and saying, well, how are you doing this now? Because they can just plug it into ChatGPT and get the answer. That's a great idea, right? They need to be able to have that time to build off of each other first and foremost, before then they can have that understanding at a basic level to introduce it to their students. Now, I should say, do not wait until you feel like you're an expert to bring it into your classroom. AI is literally moving faster than any technology in human history. You are never going to be an expert. Like, no one's an expert about AI right now. Literally, it changes every day. Every day there's a new tool, a new thing, a new something coming out. A new tech company announces that they're doing this, or they're integrating AI with this, with their product. Like, it's moving so fast, you will never be an expert. So you can't wait to that level. You need to have a basic understanding, and you need to stay on top of it and have a source of information that helps you stay on top of it and like weeds out the bad stuff. I've really been focusing my blog posts and my monthly email newsletters all on pretty much, not all, but mostly AI, and just saying, like, I know you need this information. I'm trying to help weed it out for you and give you what you need. So point being, don't wait till you're an expert, but have a basic understanding and then present it to your students. There are AI literacy curriculums out there. So Day of AI, if you just do a search for Day of AI, I think it's just dayofai.org, it's the website, is a really good one that's free. It's a free AI literacy curriculum for, I think it's K through higher ed even, not even just K-12. There's also the AI Education Project, AIEDU.org, I think is the website. They're another kind of AI literacy curriculum. I just saw that Google Applied Skills has a really good AI, at least one good AI lesson. They probably have more by now. I haven't dug into that much. So look for those resources. Also, don't feel like you have to have the answers, because there's a lot of things that nobody has answers for right now. So here's my, honestly, my biggest piece of advice to teachers right now that I've been telling them is use your students to help you come up with answers, or not even answers, ideas, right? Don't just present to your students, okay, this is, you know, what we're going to do. This is our new policy on AI, end of story. You need to bring your students into that conversation, and on a bigger level outside the classroom. So teachers in the classroom need to bring students in and work together to help find the answers and have these conversations. But at a school level, the school needs to utilize teachers, parents, students, not just the school leaders need to be in on that conversation to work together to figure out, what do we do? Do we create, do we need to edit our acceptable use policy? I would highly recommend that. It's a really good step. Okay, well, what does it need to say, right? Let's work together. There are some good guidelines coming out there, by the way, when we're talking about like policies, school policies around AI. I think it's Princeton. Hold on, let me look real quick and make sure I have the right Ivy League college. like pretty sure Stanford, Princeton. Pretty sure it's Princeton. Yeah, came out with these really good kind of guidelines of AI. If you just do a search for, hold on. And by the way, I have shared this in my social medias if you follow me and want to find the exact link. But if you do a search for, hold on, let me pull it up here. Got it. Because this is really good. I've used this a lot. Princeton University's Guidance on AI. If you do a Google search for that, it's kind of a big long URL. It should pop it up, and it has a sample syllabus. It has a memo that they sent to all of their staff in January that kind of talk about like, okay, here's the things that you might want to make changes. You might want to set policies for you. You might want to make changes to your syllabus. Here's a sample syllabus.
It's a lot of useful information for schools as they try to struggle through and think about how to creatively address a technology that's here to stay. That's only going to get, as you said, it's growing faster and faster all the time. And so, like you said, how do we integrate it in a way that is thoughtful, creative, and student-centered? And this could be a great way to help students to learn how to solve problems and to really be able to take their information and learning to the next level. I know even recently you had posted a comment, which I really enjoyed, where you were talking about writing and English language and classes and ELA. And basically, I think your comment was something along the lines of, ELA teachers, this is your calculator moment. And that really, I had to stop and think about that for a moment as thinking about, you know, the implications of, oh, well, I can add, subtract, multiply, and divide, but now all of a sudden a calculator comes into existence that wasn't there before. And now my students can do that faster than I can ever teach them how to do it. But again, without knowing how to use the technology, a calculator is useless. And so I'm curious if you can talk to some of what you're talking about in terms of this calculator moment for ELA, English Language Arts.
What I meant by that was, if you look back at the history of education, honestly, not even just education, but society in general, there's always, every new technology is always met with skepticism. And if you look at specific education examples, the eraser, did you know that when the eraser came about, teachers felt that the eraser was going to encourage students to be careless? Right? Computers, the internet, they're still, I mean, computers and the internet have been around, have been in schools for literally decades. There's still a lot of skepticism around that, right? We're still trying to figure that out. It's kind of the wild, wild west. Going back to the idea of spell check, when Spellcheck first came out and like in more like ubiquitous tools like Microsoft Word, teachers were really concerned about that. They felt like it was going to, the students were going to become reliant on Spellcheck and they weren't going to learn how to actually spell. But now actually research has found that the immediate feedback that Spellcheck gives if you do spell something wrong is actually way better than learning spelling in any other way. Because we know from research, this if you have an error, the faster that error is fixed, the easier your brain is going to say, oh no, that's right. That's not right. That's wrong, right? Versus, so Spellcheck does that. It's immediate feedback, right? And then the calculator, when the calculator came into being, teachers were like, wait, how are we, what, do we need to still teach math? We now do everything for us. So do we still teach math, right? That's exactly where we're at with writing right now. I've read some articles and seen some things about like the essay is dead, right? Because generative AI can just, if you ask it to write an essay on anything, it'll pump it out, right? So ELA teachers are like, what do? Like, this is our job to teach writing. And now this AI, this artificial intelligence can literally spit writing back out at us. So that's what I meant by, this is your calculator moment for English teachers. So when the calculator came into existence, math teachers had to rethink and say, okay, what do? But guess what? We still teach math. You still have to have a basic understanding of things to know how to run a calculator, right? And you still need to be able to do basic math without a calculator type of thing. There is a lot of debate about this, by the way, though, about, you know, okay, what level though do we need to like actually teach math and do like, you know, handwritten calculations? We still don't quite have the answer there. And it's, I don't know, when did the calculator, it's been decades since the calculator came out. So that's where we're at with English right now is generative AI does it for you. So how do English teachers teach? And I don't have all the answers, but some things that I have brainstormed is that we still have to teach writing. You still have to know how to write because you still have to be able, even if AI writes something for you, you've got to customize it. And it's not always going to be, even I think when AI gets really great, even better than it is now, you're still going to have to personalize and customize. And that still involves an understanding of writing. So instead, like, can teachers teach students how to take and edit something that AI made and make it more personal, add the human element? Can they use it to help students create outlines? Can they use it to help students organize their writing? A lot of people struggle with organizing writing that aren't linear thinkers. I'm a very linear thinker, so that is not a problem for me, but I had a lot of students that weren't linear thinkers and really struggled to organize their writing. AI is amazing. If you ever go into ChatGPT or Bard and just say, give me an outline or template, either one, outline or template for X topic, and it will spit it out. And it's amazing, like what it gives you. And then teaching them how to take and copy that outline or template and add in their own information. But guess what? It's organizing it for them. This is another way. I actually have been using AI for this a lot. When I hit a writer's block, and I'm like, I work alone a lot, so I can't just turn to the person next to me and go, oh, I'm stuck here, like, give me some ideas. I've just been plugging it into ChatGPT, and it's amazing what it comes up with and gives me ideas. And it goes, and it helps me get past that block, right? It's also great for just giving you writing prompts. I feel like teachers struggle with, what do kids write about? Or not even teachers, but kids struggle with, what do I write about? Use generative AI tools to help kids come up with prompts to write about. So anyway, that's just a few ideas that I've been kind of bouncing off the walls for English teachers in their calculator moment right now.
No, I love that, because it's all about being creative and not allowing something that could be overwhelming to become overwhelming by thinking about how do we actually use it for our benefit. And I think that that's really something that I'd love to hear more from you, if you could, of the experience that you've been having in schools and with teachers. You know, what are some of the biggest success stories for integrating AI that you've seen thus far in the classroom with teachers nowadays?
Good question. I actually wrote a blog post about this, just FYI, if anybody wants it. I wrote a blog post of 5 AI tools for teachers that are kind of like my five top tools that I felt have the most success. So if you go to lindytext.com/blog, it'll take you there and you can find my five AI tools for teachers. But just to give you kind of a rundown of the ones that I feel are like the most success that I've seen, digital assistants for teachers. So Merlin Mind is a company. They have a product called the Symphony Classroom, and Symphony Classroom has an assistant, an AI assistant called Merlin. And speaking of, I'm going to have to mute. I have one right here. I'm going to have to mute it. Merlin's going to start talking to me. So Merlin is your digital assistant as a teacher, and you can ask Merlin to do tons of things. You can say, search my Google Drive for my slides on X topic, and it'll pull that up. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, go to Newzella. It'll open the Newzella website. It has both. You can just say, hey, Merlin is the wake word and give it a prompt, or it has a remote. And I just put mine on a lanyard when I'm teaching around my neck. And mm-hmm. the remote has a push to talk microphone. So you can also just push and say, open the Kahoot website, right? It'll open things. It also has this awesome air mouse. That's not really an AI feature, but I love it. So you can use this as like a mouse to control your computer and your display from anywhere in the room. It also has, the remote has lots of features, like you can control the volume of videos. You can start videos. You can say, search YouTube for videos on dolphins, or, you know, whatever, videos on fractions, videos on how to divide fractions, and it'll do the search for you. So it's a really great tool and really effective use of AI in the classroom to help teachers save time is huge, help them teach better. And guess what? When teachers save time, they have more time to spend with students, right? Because it whittles away those few seconds that instead of having to walk to the other side of the room to get to my computer or get to my display, I'm able to stay right where I'm at and still teach and do instruction. So that's one really successful AI and education tool I've seen. I've also seen AI be really successful with formative assessments. So Conquer, and this is just one example, there's a lot out there, but Conquer is C-O-N-K-E-R. It's made by Moat, which is the audio recording tool that I love. So the same makers of Moat made Conquer. And you can literally go on there and you can say, create a 5-question multiple choice quiz about sanitary kitchen procedures, or about safety in the chemistry lab, or about dividing fractions, you know, enter whatever topic that you're teaching, and it will literally spit out however many questions you say. It gives you the questions, the answers, the correct answer. It's really good. So, I mean, it really does work, I swear. And then you can either do the quiz in Conquer. So there's a site that students can go and enter a code and they can do the, or maybe it's not a code, but students go to a site and they can do the quiz in Conquer, or there's an export to Google Forms feature. So if you're a Google Forms user, you can take those questions, put them right into a Google form. I did this the other day. It literally took me under 5 minutes to create a great formative assessment. So if you are needing those specific types of like multiple choice formative assessment type things in your classroom, do not create them, spend time creating them on your own. The AI is getting so good about doing that for you. And Conquer is just one example. Another one, Canva for Education, is free to schools. If you haven't used it, it's, I want to say my favorite, but definitely one of my favorite ed tech tools out there right now, because you can do so many things in it. Like it literally, it does everything. Canva does everything. You can just so many different, both from both a teacher and a student perspective in Canva. Canva has started integrating lots of AI things into their platform. So it has a magic write feature where it's like generative AI will write for you. It has even but little things like a AI background remover. So if you have a picture and you want the background taken out of the image, it uses AI to do that. It's also a really great way to just explore AI if you already use Canva, because you're familiar with the tool already. And you can just start playing around with the little AI tools that have been embedded in it. I love the text to image tool. You can literally go into Canva and you can say, you can describe an image. So I could say a student working on their Chromebook, and it will generate an image based upon that description for me. I've been using that a lot for like privacy reasons, right? You have to be careful about posting pictures of your students and their faces. So if I ever want to post a picture of a student and give an example, I just go and do like an AI generated image and, you know, you're good with privacy and all of that. So that's another one. So those are some examples from the teacher perspective. I have a couple more in that blog post that I talk about. From a school leader perspective, of course, all those that I said you should be looking into because you need to be able to recommend to your teachers. But I want to recommend one AI tool for school leaders, and that is an AI-based web filter. These have been around for a while, at least a few years now. I started seeing AI-based web filters, and they're amazing. So instead of most web filters, you have to input the information that you want it to filter. And of course, there always is some new term or some new something that you missed or whatever that can kind of slip through the filter. With the AI, right, it's trying to simulate human intelligence. So it will literally even block like images within a video. So if you go to a YouTube video, it will like blur parts of the video that it thinks that maybe it should be filtering. So instead of just blocking YouTube completely or completely blocking the video like most web filters do, Hopra has the Hopra filter is an example of an AI-based web filter to look into. So, and one other thing I should say about that, those are, what did I give you, four examples of kind of AI in education and things that I feel like are really useful and going well. There's a lot out there right now because when ChatGPT was released in November of 2022, they then made their data set, the GPT-3 data set, available. So ChatGPT is made by OpenAI is the name of the company. It's called OpenAI because they're all about open source. So they made that GPT-3 data set open and available. So all of a sudden, all the AI race was on, right? All these companies started taking GPT-3 data set and integrating it into their tools to kind of be the first ones out there, which is good and bad. It's good because, wow, like, holy cow, there's a lot of AI stuff out there. It's kind of bad because, holy cow, there's a lot of AI stuff out there. And in the race to get it out, a lot of it, is not quite there. It's what, if you ever do like product design or product development, we call an MVP. An MVP is not most valuable player in product. Minimally viable product. There are a lot of MVP AI tools out there right now. And so something I've heard from teachers is, oh, well, you know, I tried it and it didn't work well. I felt like it took me more time than saved me time. There is a lot of that out there right now. So that's one of the reasons I also wrote one of that 5 AI tools for teachers blog post. I kept seeing these like lists of just endless AI tools with no explanation of what they were. And I should say not just endless AI tools for education, right? And it was just this list, but it didn't say like, what is it? What does it do? Like, does it work? So I took lists and kind of tried to start filtering them out to find those things that are not MVPs that are actually right there yet. So I say that to say, like, don't give up on it. We're in a really weird space right now with AI in general. And there's a lot of MVPs out there. So it'll get better. They're going to keep, you know, that's what products do. They keep tweaking and adding things and give them feedback. I've been giving tons of feedback to like Canva. I use Canva almost every day. They're probably sick of hearing my feedback by now, actually. I've been saying to them, like, you know, this is awesome. I love this, but I need to be able to do this to make it really transform my teaching or my workflow.
Lindy, you talk about, you talked about the Princeton guide, Princeton University guide to AI. And I noticed on there, I was just kind of looking over it as I was listening, and it talks about the importance of really making the pedagogical intentions behind an assignment clear. And, you know, that strikes me as a small detail, but perhaps pretty important and potentially transformative one.
Definitely. And I think that's where that acceptable use policy comes into play. I think teachers have need to put it in their syllabi, right? Depending upon, you know, if you teach elementary, you don't have a syllabi, but high school, even middle school, you should have, even if you don't call it a syllabi, some type of document, right, that outlines the expectations of your course and how they're going to be graded and what they're going to learn. Having that information in there, especially English teachers, if one of your learning objectives or standards is to teach writing, then you need to put in that syllabi the pedagogical intention, right? That you're here to learn how to write. If you just go to ChatGPT and have it write everything for you, you're not learning, and that's not helping you in the long run. And believe me, I taught middle and high school kids. Their brains are not fully developed. It's hard to get through to them to understand that this is better for you in the long run. But that doesn't mean that you can't have the conversation because you feel like it's going to go on deaf ears. You have to have that conversation. You have to have it in the syllabi. And then to take it a step up, the school needs to add to their acceptable use policy the pedagogical intention. Just like you said, like, and that Princeton University example is such a good one, even though it's higher ed. If you're listening to this and you're K-12, you can still take that and tweak the language just a bit. I'm actually working on kind of a teacher's guide to AI right now, and kind of thinking through like giving an example acceptable use policy and example syllabi in there. So anyway, in the works, to TBD.
Love it. Nice. Love it. Something to tease for the audience that they can look forward to here. I think that it's really important as we're talking about, you know, what the intentions are and what we're trying to do with AI, to talk about, you said, you know, we're at the beginning stages, right? And it's growing faster than anything's ever grown in terms of technology. And so I'm curious, where can or maybe even ought we go with AI from here, from where we are currently?
Good question. I think we're in that MVP stage of AI tools, that we honestly shouldn't be focusing on the tools. I mean, that should never be the focus. We always talk about focuses on the pedagogy, the learning objective, the standard, right? And just going back to that and remembering, like, yes, there's so much fun and pizzazz out there right now with all this AI being integrated into new tools and the tools that you already use. I think schools need to take a step back. They need to focus on those policies. Before school starts in August of 2023, so we're recording this podcast on June 1st of 2023. So before, you've got 2 months before school starts again. And I know that's tight, but I mean, you should have already been working on this. If you haven't been working on this, you need to do it now over the summer. Having those like focus groups with students and parents and teachers and the school leaders from your school and your district, and come up with those policies and those that acceptable use policy and that example syllabus or language for teachers to focus on the pedagogy. I think we also right now need to back up and focus on supporting educators. So going back to what we said at the beginning, like, what do educators do right now? How do they teach kids? Educators have to understand it. So they need to understand what it can do, the possibilities it has, the limitations. They need to understand, you know, the copyright, the fact checking, all of that stuff that we talked about needs to be a focus over the summer. I predict, and I could be very wrong, this is just an IMO prediction, but so Google, by the way, this is just interesting timeline of the last 6 months. ChatGPT was released by OpenAI in November of 2022. That like totally transformed the AI, kind of created the new AI revolution, right? The AI race. Google actually sped up the release of Bard. They hadn't planned to release it. They ended up releasing it in, I want to say, February, March-ish time. That wasn't the plan. They actually sped it up to compete, right? So now what we see is the text generation features, that ability of generative AI to you to say, write this for me, and it writes for you. It's now in Canva. They call it Magic. It's now in, if you use Notion, I love Notion. Notion has a full, you know, like text generation feature for you. I say this to say it's not in Google Docs yet. It's not in Microsoft Word yet, which are our two big word processing programs. But Google announced March, April, maybe April-ish time that it's coming. They have not given a specific timeline. They just said that it's coming to Google Docs and Gmail soon. I predict before school starts, we'll see that generative AI features in Google Docs. Microsoft, I think, has said that it's integrating that ability into like Microsoft Office. I don't know about a time, if they've set a timeline or not, but point being, I predict, again, I could be wrong. It could happen after August, that when August hits and school starts, our main word processing programs are going to have the generative AI text generation features. And that's the tools that, as far as I know, every school uses one or the other or both, Google Docs and Microsoft Word, right? So this past school year with ChatGPT and then Bard, you were able to just block it. You could just block ChatGPT, right? You could just not enable Google Bard on your, if you're a Google school, right? Or just block bard.google.com site and students couldn't get to it. What is your school going to do when the same ability is in Google Docs or in Microsoft Word or Word Online, whichever one you use, right? We're not going to be able to just keep blocking it next school year. So that was a long-winded way of saying, like, what should schools be doing to prepare for the coming school year? Like, you have got to be on top of it this summer. And I know that stinks, teachers, like spending your summers learning and researching. But, and if your school's not on top of it, if you're a teacher, you need to push your school and be like, hey, I'm a teacher. I have to have guidance coming up this coming school year on AI and the pedagogical implications. And do we block? Do we not block? You know, what do I do? I have to have guidance from you as my school leaders, right?
Yeah. Well, this is so much great information. Like, I feel like it's a lot to digest. And as you're saying, there's constantly more of it coming. So I'm just curious, as we kind of finish out our time for today, and obviously we could keep talking for hours and hours about this information, and we probably will be behind by the time we get to the end of that conversation. But I'm curious, what insights do you want to just leave us with? You talked about the need to kind of get on this now and to start thinking about it. But just in terms of big picture with this for a moment, what kind of thoughts would you like to leave the listeners with and to think about where we might go that could be so exciting that we don't even have, haven't even considered it yet necessarily?
Yeah. So a couple thoughts. One, I want to say that if you're at that point where like, I am not going to spend my summer exploring AI, I'm not interested in it. Like, this is not my thing. I don't want to learn. I just want to put a little kind of nugget into you and say, this isn't going away. It's most definitely not going away. Very, very soon, AI tools and that generative AI ability is going to be ubiquitous in every digital tool that we use. And right now, as an educator, we're at a really pivotal time that the educators that explore and use and introduce it and have the conversations are going to help develop where AI goes in education and where and what effect it has, whether that be good or bad. And we want it to go to the good because there's a lot of good that AI can do for education. So to kind of answer the second part of that question of thinking big picture of like, where should we be thinking in education about AI and how can AI affect education? I am actually really excited at the opportunities that AI presents to education. I think it has huge ability, like I said before, to save teachers time. And I think if you asked every teacher in the world, even I'll go as far as saying the world right now, like, what do you most need? I think almost everyone would say time. I need more time, right? Mm-hmm. So AI has the ability. Are we there yet? A little bit. Things like formative assessment, like I talk about, and like digital teaching assistants, where they're a little bit, where it's kind of starting to maybe save you a time, a little bit of time, but it has the ability to really decrease the time that you spend on those administrative tasks. And there's research out there. I've seen pie charts where it breaks down the average amount of time that teachers spend, and less than 50% of teachers' time on average, of course, is spent on instruction and teaching and learning and with their students. That other 50% is all of like the administrative things, right?
Yeah.
I think it has the opportunity to save time, decrease time spent on administrative tasks, therefore opening more time for you to be a better teacher, to create awesome lesson plans, to have authentic learning opportunities, to spend more time with your students, developing relationships with your students, right? I keep telling everyone, no matter what, and this should actually be one of my big key insights, takeaways from this episode, is whenever you question yourself of like, what do I do when it comes to AI? Just remember, go back to this, focus on the human element. What can humans do that AI can't? And there's a lot right now. Remember, we are not to general AI yet, not even close. So there's still a whole lot that a human can do that an AI cannot do. Focus on that human element, add the personality, the creativity, the critical thinking, the problem solving, right? I think AI has amazing opportunity to make personalized learning a reality. Like, we've talked about personalized learning forever, it seems like, maybe not forever, yeah, but a long time. COVID really, I feel like, pushed the narrative of we really need to get to personalized learning, but it seems so daunting to have every student have a personalized learning path. AI, and there are already adaptive learning platforms out there that help with this. AI really has the potential, if done right, to help us get to that personalized learning, I think. I think it has the ability to help us with data-driven decision-making in education. We're not statisticians. Educators typically aren't statisticians. And I think, but we need to have data. We need to analyze data. I think AI can really help with that. AI can help prepare students for their future. Again, it's not going away, right? It's going to be, it is already kind of ubiquitous, just getting more and more every single day. So if we don't allow students to use AI-based tools and explore those in schools, we are not setting them up for their future. There's also an argument, and if you follow me on socials, I have talked about this a lot, of the new digital divide, that if your school's solution is to just block, for one, like I said a little bit ago, it's soon not going to be possible because it's going to be so ubiquitous. But the other side of the argument there is equity. You know, if you're blocking the access to AI at your school, then you're basically saying like, oh, well, the argument I hear from that is, well, they're going to do it outside of school no matter what, if they have the means. Right? If they have a smartphone, if they're able to get to the public library and use the public library's computer, if they don't have computer or internet at home, right? So if you're not allowing students to explore it in school, you're creating a major equity issue, a digital divide of the new haves and have-nots of AI world. Because, and again, this is just IMO, I could be totally wrong, but I predict that kids that are in schools now, and not even just kids that are in schools, us adults that are still of not retirement age, the new work environment and like skill set is going to be those that know how to use AI well to save time and do amazing things and focus on the human element. So they know how to use AI to take away all those administrative tasks so they can get more done in a day of the human element facts, and those that don't know how to do that. So if you're not preparing your students for this side of it, right, you that's an equity problem. So sure. I could go on and on about that in the big picture.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, there's
a little bit of information.
Yeah, there's so much there, like you said. And again, we could probably do an episode in like a month and you would have completely new information, completely new ideas, completely new things. And so I love this. If you could just give our listeners how they can get you on social, we'll put everything in the links in when the episode comes out, but just let them know how they can contact you. And thanks again for such awesome information sharing with us.
Yeah. So yeah, if you go to lindytext.com/blog, so LINDY techs.com/blog. That'll take you to my website. All my social medias are there. That takes you straight to my blog page, and you'll see I have 2 blog posts right now as of June 1st and more coming. There's one called 5 AI Tools for Teachers, another blog post about FETC and TCEA, kind of ed tech must knows. The majority of that post is about AI from last February after those conferences. Like I said, I'm also working on kind of a teacher's guide to AI. So if you go to my site, go to that page, if you subscribe, you'll get my monthly email newsletter. I've been putting out tons of resources. All the resources I talked about today, I've been sharing in that newsletter. So that's a really good way to kind of stay up to date. And like I said, I'm kind of helping filter the noise for teachers, hopefully.
Love it. It's very important. So thank you so much, Lindy. And I'm sure our listeners and teachers and the educators out there will gain a lot from this. And so thank you for sharing your time and your insights and your expertise on this field. So thank you.
Bye, Lindy.
Thank you, Lindy.
Josh and I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode of Amplifying Optimism in Education. Please join us next week for another new episode and conversation with an innovative educator from around the world.